Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Antya Lila, Chapter 5, How Prajumna Misra Received Instructions from Ramananda Rai, page 112, verse 3, 5, 146 to 164. Srila Damodar Goswami continued, Mother Saraswati makes Purushadhama to mean Purushottama, he whom all men are subordinate. Neshas, or Maya, may be called Bandhu, because she entangles everyone in the material world. Therefore, by using the word Bandhuhan, Mother Saraswati says that Lord Krishna is the vanquisher of Maya. Shishupal also blasphemed Krishna in this way, but the goddess of learning, Saraswati, offered her prayers to Krishna even by his words. In that way, through your verse, although your verse is blasphemous according to your meaning, Mother Saraswati has taken advantage of it to offer prayers to the Lord. So we see is that that's why, because the question was, is if it's so wrong, how is it that all these, you know, Lord's associates all thought it was wonderful? Because they were hearing it according to what Saraswati was saying, not according to what he was saying. The Damodar Goswami, because he's analyzing these things, he's saying what he's saying. And therefore the words, because you have Purusha Adhama, could be Purusha Adhama, you know. So then it will switch it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so then he's pointing out is that Saraswati may say nice things to the Lord, but the point is you're writing it and saying it's your work, so it's going to be according to what you say. Others, the Paramahamsas, may be able to take from it, you know, what Saraswati is saying, but that's not good enough as a work, because then you have, you know, it's if you're looking at it as poetics, then you'll find faults like that.
Maharaj, I wonder if Sarvadhamadhara Goswami is using, not only is using grammatical rules, but he's also looking at actually what the Bengali Brahmana was supposed to say to glorify Lord Chaitanya. But this cannot be applied to anyone who makes a mistake in Sanskrit language. Or, you know, like
it in may. Philosophy, it may, but the point is you have to go by what they're saying.
Right.
Means these great personalities may see like that. Like when we hear about Shishupala Vada, then you know that you're bringing out these things and the saying like that, because you're looking at the aspect as Jagai and Madai are actually Jai and Vijai. So looking at it from that point, then you can appreciate those. But looking at it as Jagai and Madai, then he's saying all nonsense.
Okay.
I mean, you know, or as Shishupala and Dantavakra. So the point is what the guy's writing is nonsense. It's just straightforward. It's just wrong. But what he's saying is Mother Saraswati, because it's about the Lord, she takes advantage to offer her prayers to the Lord, and therefore those who can see from that angle can appreciate it. But the point is, it's being a written work. So in the Bhagavatam, what Shishupal said, that's there, and it's in that context of how he said it. Then the Acharyas are putting into the context of how Saraswati. So that's the whole thing. It's not that you take it and somebody writes something and it's nonsense and you turn it into that and say, it's all right. No, it's wrong.
Okay.
Like what Shishupal says, what he's saying is intended is wrong. But at the same time, Saraswati's taking advantage to offer the prayers. You know? Because the point is you know, especially we're sadhakas, and so then, you know, that has to be seen. It's what's going to be proper for us to elevate ourselves, for us to have the right understanding.
So we couldn't use, for example, the instance of Shankaracharya is giving the wrong philosophy, but hey, he's Lord Shiva and he's got a plan.
It means the philosophy is wrong, but the point is he's part of the Lord's overall plan to bring people in over thousands of years from being being individuals who are so attached to sense gratification, they misuse the Veda, and they can't. They're so attached to rituals that give them what they want, and then they misinterpret those rituals, so they're just making trouble for everybody.
Right.
So then those souls have to be led away from the Vedas, because if they're working with the Vedas, they'll only misinterpret. Then you have to bring them back in, now that they've been peaceful for a few thousand years, you know, then you can now take it and adjust them, so now it'll be bring them closer to coming to the Vaishnava understanding. But you have to do that through the Vedas. But you can't suddenly, you're taking people who are, basically you could say Gnostic, but you have to make them Austic. So that's going to be only through the aspect that they believe in the Veda. So you're going to explain Buddhism through the Veda. Then from there, then the Vaishnavacharyas, Ramanuja and Madhva, will come along and establish Vaishnavism. Then you can establish the Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Because we're all going over Vaishnavism. You can't appreciate Gaudiya Vaishnavism like that. You know, because it's just so much more subtle like that. So therefore, you have to know the context. So in one context, we're talking about it as Lord Shiva and that, and it's all part of the plan. But that plan doesn't mean that what he's saying is useful. It's useful to get straight up front atheists into workable atheists. But it's still nonsense. But he's done that on the order of the Lord.
Right.
But you see, as he also, in his writing, he has written things about the Lord.
Yes.
You know, like he makes that point about, was it Narayana Paro Vyaktat, or something like that. He says that, but they'll just kind of, you know, and then move on. You know, just like Prabhupada says, a grihastha gives 50% of his, you know, profit in charity. Devotees will go, if you ask, did Prabhupada say this? And they'll all say, yes. You know, so? So that's what they do, the Mayavadis do it with Sankarsha. Or he wrote, you know, Bhajagovindam. I think that he wrote that at the very end. That's one of his last writings. Yeah, in other words, after all this nonsense, and he just says the idiots, you know, worship Govinda and give this all up. But they'll say, well, Govinda was a spiritual master, so he's saying worship his spiritual master. And yeah, they miss it. And there's also a book that's just about Radhakrishna pastimes.
Yes, I heard that.
Yeah. And if you ask, I don't remember the name of the book. It's not a big book, but it's not so small. I think it's like 80 shlokas or something like that. But so if you ask them about it, they'll agree he wrote it. But I remember asking one of the big Mayavadi Wallas, and they said, yes, he wrote it, but we have no understanding why would he write that. It's just like, you know, he's written all this one, and why did he write it? So they don't catch it. And like the worship in Guru Vayur, that was established by Shankaracharya.
Really?
Yeah. You know that they do the Singita Govind for the deity at every offering, that they have the five elephant processions a day, and the whole time they may be singing songs, but there's one group that's just chanting Hare Krishna. You know, so I think of them, most of them are quite short. Maybe the deity goes around quite quickly in that. But the last one at night's like 3 hours. So they're doing Harinam Kirtan for 3 hours. Like that. So, yes.
The difficulty seems to be is that, as you explained, the contextual truth is lying in the same basket with an absolute truth. Mm-hmm. And then we pull some reference, or we pull some shloka, or even a statement from Srila Prabhupada,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know what is what,
mm-hmm.
and we just, for our own advantage, we can jungle and say it's the same, but this is an absolute statement,
mm-hmm.
and this you have to build like 10 hours. You know, context for that statement to be
mm-hmm.
the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So the same with the Adi Shankara. as you mentioned this morning, time, place, and circumstances. He worked on that principle.
Yeah.
But it's not an absolute truth. He wasn't presenting an absolute truth.
No.
But
he was just, it was a process to get.
Yeah.
So that's for him. Krishna personally asked him to do it. Krishna didn't personally ask us to do that stuff. So we shouldn't say, well, you know, we're just trying to bring people to the mode of goodness. You know, they're so fallen and all. But the problem is, are you in the mode of goodness that you can bring them there? Yeah. You know, the whole point is in the age of Kali, it'll be harder to bring people to goodness than it will to pure goodness. Because pure goodness, you just chant the holy name. But goodness means you have to adjust the conditioned nature, purify to the point. How are you going to purify it without the holy name? Therefore, anyone who says, well, we're just bringing together, it's completely nonsense. Absolute nonsense. We're at the yoga studio, we're just, why are they there? So they look good, so they can have better sex. How is that the mode of goodness? You know? They're making so much money and anxiety. And so therefore then they just want their mind peaceful so they can make money, so they can buy this and that, so they can live their mundane life. Complete mode of passion. But passion's better than ignorance. So if you're saying, yes, we're just cultivating the mode of passion because there's so much of ignorance, that I could say, okay, that's that you can try. What, why you would do that? But don't say, we're cultivating the mode of goodness. You know? You know what I'm saying? The guys are there and they got their hair and their beards. Are they leaving the beards or are they trimming them? You know, is it just guys there, you know, sitting around in their copings or the whole thing's full of ladies? You know what I'm saying? And are the ladies, you know, dressed up in the, you know, in their burkas or something like that? No, they're wearing their nice tank tops and all that because they sit nice and straight. When did the girl look best? You know? And then they're sitting there, supposed to be looking at the tip of their nose, but it might be, you know, we'll let everyone else fill in the blanks. And so then they're all hanging out there. So where's this goodness they're talking about? You know, and is the guy in the mode of goodness? Does he wash his feet? Does he, you know, how does he eat? Has he regulated? Is he showing that the mode of goodness means regulation? So that's the problem, is Krishna told Shankara to do that, but he's given for us to give pure devotional service. That's what the mission's giving. That's what we can help in. Otherwise, you see these others, you attract by that, they stay that. You know, you use vegan to attract people, they stay vegan. They don't like vegetarians. Krishna happens to, that's what he eats, but they don't like that. So Krishna doesn't get his food. They won't give him sugar, they won't give him milk, they won't give him, you know, it's all the things he likes, they won't give him.
No honey.
Yeah. It means that, so in other words, they're vegans who happen to be devotees. They're not shooting for pure devotional service, because the vegans, devotional service, in other words, we attract them with that, and that's not how it works. So we have to be very, very careful. It's one thing is if it starts with that and then you've told them what is the standard, but I haven't yet to hear them say what's the standard. Otherwise, I'm in a devotee restaurant that serves vegetarian and vegan, sitting down and eating, because you're sitting there, devotees come and sit there because they're at the restaurant also. And then the whole conversation is why you're eating vegetarian and not vegan. That's the devotees, not the karmis. Karmis want to know, you know, what's the mud on your forehead and what's with the bed sheets and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, you guys, you know, what are you doing? You know, what's with... Is that all right?
Yeah.
Getting too grumpy here. No, but it is. It's just one more philanthropic, you know, deviation from the first Prabhupada said. Spiritualists fall down, they get into philanthropy and altruism. That's just where it goes. So we have to be careful. Yeah. So it's not, these aren't mediums to use. You may try to establish a point, but just like this, if we're not careful, then they'll say, oh, the Brahmin is speaking properly because Saraswati's speaking through him. Mm-hmm. But the point is it's Krishna's cows. How can you neglect Krishna's cows? confirmed. You know?
Here, Swarup Damodar, he's using a brilliant approach. He actually, he asked the man who wrote that thing, he says, okay, you explain it. Mm-hmm. And even if it is an absolute statement, it needs an explanation. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, Pratigya, Hetu, mm-hmm. Udaharana, Upanaya, Siddhanta, and then Sangati. You have to connect it with the next. Because we're talking just about the introductory verse.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So this gives us a hint how we can discuss if the statement is given. Okay, and explain it. Do you know how to explain
it? That's the right thing, because the point is he may be meaning something else, but he's used the wrong words. So if in his explanation he says the proper thing, then you can point out how this wouldn't be how you'd explain it. You know, because the thing is he's saying these things and it sounds poetic, you know, the moving Lord and the things like that, but it's not actually that poetic. Poetic is flowers and, you know, rain and dancing and music. That's poetic. So he's using the wrong context. But that's what you're saying, that's the excellent way to do it, is just what you mean. And it also saves you a lot of time. Because many times they are trying to say the right thing. You know, devotees, they're trying to say the right thing. They're just using the wrong words or the wrong approach. So if you ask, then you find out, and then you discuss that. That's nice. But then you should consider these would be the faults if you use this method. So that's the thing which I'm meaning here is that, you know, having that aspect, talking about these things, but you have to talk about goodness that has a value in connection with pure goodness. Otherwise, yeah, it's just a nice guy who in his next life, you know, becomes maybe a deer or a cute little, you know, I don't know, furry dog or something, you know. They're nice, they're pleasant, you know, they don't bite your ankle off, you know. So it's so that you have to say, like you said, the context has to be there. Mode of goodness has an advantage if you're going for pure goodness. But otherwise, in the contemporary society, even though using goodness, it's for. It means it's just like, let's say people who are, means Prabhupada, I think it's 11th canto, that has pointed out that anyone born in a noble, rich, religious, aristocratic family is all from devotional service. So now you have all these people, but what do they use that position for much of the time? You know, what's the stereotype? Right? That's they're completely proud of their position, look down on everyone else, and use their position of piety to advantage for their own sense gratification.
You know, I heard Prabhupada giving a lecture on that verse that, you know, you take birth in a wealthy family. Mm-hmm. Because Prabhupada oftentimes quotes that verse. Mm-hmm. And then he said, even if you take birth in a wealthy family, there's no chance because you'll get into Maya again.
Yes, yes. Yes. Like that. So that's why it's not ideal. It's not ideal. It's an opportunity that you could, but then how many don't? Because that's the meaning, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, then he points out that's the meaning of Naradhamma, is someone who has the opportunity and rejects it. You know, it means, in other words, they're opposed to devotional service. It's not that they come across, they have the opportunity, and they don't immediately take up. They just, you know, here and that, and just, you know, what's that? You know, they don't get necessarily involved, but they actually are against it. So that's Naradhamma, that's the lowest. But at the same time, is they're all kind of a little bit, you know, they're all kind of connected. You know, then they're Mayaya Pratigyana, they take on those Asura qualities, they work like an ass. So, yeah, yes.
So it seems to be that there are three main aspects of the statement, because devotees, usually, they can quote some shloka, which is a statement in itself.
Yes, yes.
Any statement, doesn't matter. But then, there's logic to the statement, which you explain as time, place, and circumstances. Mm-hmm. But also, there's an intent why this statement is given. what am I trying to prove? Like Krishna says.
Means why they're using it, or why it was there originally in Shastra?
No. Why we use it?
Okay, so then the second one would be its logic and why it was used in that Shastra.
Exactly.
In the run. Okay, and the third one is why they're using it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if we say, you know, that famous verse, Apichat Sugaracharo Bhajatemananyabak, what is Krishna trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
But then we've seen devotees, they try to cover their own nonsense with that same statement. So that statement, there's a logic of the statement, and there's an intent behind that statement. So we have to consider three.
Yes, that's very nice.
And see what we actually discuss, whether it's logic, whether it's a statement, you know, on its own, a natural statement, or what am I trying to say, actually?
Mm-hmm.
Not covering the real meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And when we studied Vedanta Sutra, that was like dense forest of uncovering things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and the same in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu saying that the statements are very clear.
Mm-hmm.
But how you interpret it, it's complete. It has no connection. It's all your
mental own speculation. Yes. That's why it's so important to follow the Acharya. So as Prabhupada's giving it, how he's explaining it, that's how we have to take it, that context. Because otherwise, if we put it into our own...
Because the purport of that verse, Apichasana, Prabhupada says, once, twice, three times, you're not serious.
Mm-hmm.
He says that.
Yeah, the whole point is that devotional service, because we have to see it in the context that devotional service is the real thing. So if that's going on, you don't worry about it. So worrying about it mean that they can't advance or something. Things can't be adjusted. Because otherwise, then you have the other side where it's eternal damnation. Once you do something. But that's the Christian. It's not Vaishnava. It's not Vedic. It's not even real. They made it up, you know, somewhere in the... 4th or 5th century, like that. So it was created, because you see, that's the interesting thing, is in the New Testament, everyone is like squeaky clean. I mean, like through the car wash, organic, sudsy, like shampoo, the whole thing. But in the Bible, the Old Testament, basically everybody has some serious fault. But they're there, and we're taking advantage of what is learned from them. Every one of them, there's something weird happened at some point. Every one of them. So the point is you try your best and keep moving on. But the other is that as soon as there's a fault, they're out, but then that's criticizing.
That's from Adam and Eve.
Yeah, and it starts there. So. Yeah.
I remember the Sivaka Maharaj saying, Adam and Eve, Adama, fallen, Eve, Eva, certainly.
Certainly. Yeah. 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 So it's just, that. But the point is what is trying to be given, what's gone. Those are the things you look at. And so the point is if devotional service is the real thing, and everything else only has its value in connection with devotional service, then you have the point of, let's say someone had a problem, now they're doing devotional service, then why consider the past? Right? Means senior devotees that work with them that might be in a position to give guidance and all that, will keep their eye on anything that could come up that's a problem from the past. Like, let's say the person has a problem with money. Don't put him around money. Have someone else take care of that and have him do, preaching or other things like that. But the point is it's not that, oh, he did that and so he can't do anything. You hear sometimes it's that, okay, so we're thinking, yeah, this devotee will do this and that, and he's doing nicely, everyone appreciates, and then when everybody's about to come to vote, someone raises their hands and goes, no, but 20 years ago in my temple, he did this. It's kind of like 20 years of chanting and there's no progress? What's he doing now? Is he still doing that? No, but he did that, so he's unqualified.
That's Christian.
Hmm? Yeah, it's Christian. Yeah. I can only speak from that side. And from that. I'm not sure what the Islamic take is on this angle.
Oh.
But, huh? Oh, they killed the guy. Okay, yeah, so that's,
yeah,
so that's straightforward.
They get on the crane, and they hang you on the crane.
Oh.
That's what they're doing now.
Cranes?
Yeah, the new Taliban government.
They use cranes for that.
Yeah, they use a crane, and then they just hang you on the crane.
Oh. Yeah, he just pulls it up and then.
You don't have to build a stage and have to. Okay, so.
No guillotine.
Every Friday you're on the crane.
Oh, so Friday's the day.
Friday is the day for the crane.
Really, but so it's a day of relaxment, so you can come out, see, watch the entertainment. Okay.
You don't have to go. You're missing online.
Oh, online. Okay.
That's how you know.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So the aspect is there, but if the guy keeps doing it, then you have to look at it that they need help. You have to put them in a situation in which that can be corrected if they're interested in that, and if they're not, then you have to somehow or another create a situation in which they can't disturb others. You know, like that. You know, once, twice, thrice, no more. So when it gets to no more, then you have to consider. It means you're careful about it before that. But the point is that the living entities, because otherwise, is what's happening is we're taking it from the position that the material world can be perfect, and this person's not perfect, so it's a problem for the society. But we're looking at it that if you're in the material world, it's already a problem. Perfect is the spiritual world. So therefore, if someone makes mistakes, that's natural. It's not good, it's not approved, but it happens. Because we see is that, like Prabhu was mentioning about rationalizing their own position, but there's a good chance, I've seen so many times that when you have like a group meeting and you're discussing these moral things, the one that stands up and yells and screams and punches his fist in the air, much of the time, he's covering up his own guilt. Many times. So many times. So it's something they can relate to, and they've done, they may not be doing it anymore, they may have corrected it, but they generally get the most freaked out about it. That way no one looks at them. You know, it's like that, I'm not sure if it was in Spain or something, like that person attacked Jaipa Takamaraj. And after attacking him, then he used his knife and made some slight cuts and then ran and said, you know, he's been attacked by that guy who he just tried to kill. And then the police, that it took him a while to figure it out. So at first then they caught the guy and they arrested Maharaj. Then with time they figured it out, it was the other way around. You know. So it's also one of the things that says the tricks of the thieves is when they see something's there, they say thief, and they point, and everybody looks, and they all start running, and so then as they're running, he disappears. It's very common. I've seen it many, many times. That the person who has a problem with moral things, then they push it. So now if you have the person, he's like this with himself, and he's like that with others, giving them the same consideration, then you might consider maybe he's not rationalizing. But when for themselves they're very liberal and for others they're very strict, then you know it's definitely a rationalism. But at the same time, as if they stay in devotion, it's a fault, so if they stay in devotional service, they'll be corrected also. So that's the whole point, is that everybody, you know, I mean, that's the statement is overarching, you know, papi tapi jato chilo, you know, because when you say papi tapi, it just means, papi means, you know, impious, tapi means just, you know, it's just like, you know, how you say, this one, that one, you know, it just means, and jato chila means whatever was there. So that covers everybody. Then harinamay ruvirilo. So if you have that faith in the holy name, then you won't have the problems. But you still have to use maturity and like what Prabhu was saying, look at the intent, look at this and that. Because otherwise, we see, with so many of these senior men, they have a problem, he'd take them with him traveling. In other words, it was all about association. When they got there, you know, stable again, and they go back to the service. One devotee, I think he probably did that two or three times.
He says, come and stay with me.
Yeah.
Or I'll come and stay with you.
Yeah, he'll just do that, and he won't like the that fault-finding aspect. You know, it's just like, I've had it happen maybe twice. You know, talking on something and you're bringing a point that brings it, that could open the door for the, those who take, who appear in the Krishna consciousness movement, who are Kali Chelas, and that could come up. You have to squash that immediately in an open discussion. Because then they'll just use that for anybody that they find is not the way they, in their interpretation, is, and it's all called their nonsense like that. It just starts like a witch hunt. So the whole point is that Kali just takes advantage of anybody. If someone's in Maya, he's taking advantage. It's not that they have the intent of being. There may be individuals who have the intent, you know. But it doesn't mean that they're, it just means that they become an instrument of Maya because they're in Maya themselves. And so then it has influence and others get influenced. You know, it's just like, let's say, some devotee had very strong emotional problems like that, but they're not working things out with the other devotees, or someone can't relate, so they go to a modern psychologist or psychiatrist. You know, they do some sessions with them, they get them back on their feet. But their getting back on the feet means is that, you know, you've had all these problems because you're restricting yourself, you know, you're like this, you're not doing what you want to do, you know, not being the real you. So basically, you're having problem with functioning on the higher levels of consciousness, so they just drop you down to anamoy, and then when you're inspired, then they think they've done a great job. So then the person comes back to the temple, they feel good, everyone else talks to them, and then they tell their philosophy that they picked up from that, and the whole temple disappears. Literally.
Yeah.
Just walks out the door. You know, like that. So that's not necessarily that person, what, you know, was sent by Kali Raj himself, and they were thinking, I'll go in and do this. It's just that Kali takes advantage of their Maya and has an effect. And so then we have to, you know, then preach. So all it's there, because then you understand is that if we're not careful, we can be used in, you know, some other way. Does that make sense? You know, it's like they have some nonsense people in society. Government has some something they want to get done, and they take advantage of the situation that these nonsense people will do something, and then they move it in the direction that they want. Not that those nonsense people are working for the government. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
They just take advantage. So Kali, you know, it's his age, so he's, you know, he does it, and, you know, how you say, you know, each individual Kali will be, you know, working with 72 of these in his term. So, you know, it's pretty straightforward. You have four regular principles, basically, you know, respect of authority, a few others like that, and you only have to focus on that. And so, you know, he gets good at it. Yeah. So it always has to be, as we were discussing, I think it was yesterday, about balance. You brought up the thing about the balance. Is that balance has to be there. Is in a particular context, you'll look at it one aspect. You may be inspiring to the one person, trying to inspire them, but you're inspiring the context of becoming better in their Krishna conscious practice. Not that it's all right, you can go on doing your nonsense, it doesn't matter. You just carry on chanting. No, it's a matter of you're trying to be Krishna conscious, you're having difficulties, then you surrender to Krishna, like we saw in the prayer this morning. Is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying to the Lord that he'll have the strength to deal with these things, because the strength doesn't come from us. You know, so you find like that with others, and you know the standard, they have to be kind and compassionate and these kind of things, and not use it politically for their own purpose. So it is a delicate point. It's all part of the culture, but it comes down is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making the point that compassion is inherent in bhakti. It's not different from bhakti. so that the devotee doesn't give any trouble to any living entities. That's because of the natural compassion that's there in the devotional process. So when that compassion is applied towards Krishna, it's called prema. When it's applied towards other living entities in the spiritual realm, it's friendship. So in other words, you're expressing prema towards Krishna and friendship towards others, because the quality of compassion is inherent, is the nature. The soul has that quality. And so then, it being the application of bhakti, then it comes out, you know, as prema for Krishna and friendship with the devotees, because they're all engaged to serve Krishna in that prema. When you come into the material context, then it expands more, is that there's compassion for the the innocent, but there's indifference for those who are opposed to Krishna consciousness. And indifference means you just don't deal with them. You don't want to have anything to do with them. Indifference doesn't mean you let it all go on if it's happening in the devotional context. It's outside, what do we care? We don't get it. So does that make sense? So that kind of thing is that. So it has to be seen what's the context. Okay.
So compassion.
Compassion, yes. Is it real?
No,
it's just what...
Oh, okay, because I'm going to say it says Bisleri, because of the Gurukul. I once saw lined up a bunch of bottles. One said, I can't remember the names, but they changed the letters. So when you first look at it, you'll think it's Bisleri by...
I know that brand.
But there's like three of them.
Oh, really?
Three different brands. Yeah, and one day the boys had lined all the bottles up right next to each other. Someone took a picture. It was really funny. It was
just exactly the same color.
Yeah, everything, the letters, everything. But just they changed one letter, Bisleri to Bislero or Bislori. You know.
Yeah.
There's no difference between Lord Jagannath and Krishna, but here Lord Jagannath is fixed as the absolute person appearing in wood, whereas he does not move. Therefore, he does not move. Thus, Lord Jagannath and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although appearing as two, are one, because they are both Krishna, who is one alone. Right? Because he was taking it that one's moving, one's not moving. So he's showing actually, no, one is fixed, but he's the Supreme Lord, and the other may be moving around, but he's also the Supreme, so they're the same person. Not that Jagannath's just the external body and Lord Chaitanya is just the internal soul. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya's body is Maya and Jagannath's body is Maya.
The same argument was part of the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and it's not Paramananda Puri, it's another sannyasi who was wearing a true...
The deerskin.
A deerskin?
I think Brahmananda Puri. No?
Brahmananda Bharati. Brahmananda Bharati. And then after he recognized he made a mistake, he started glorifying Lord Chaitanya. He says, "You are the walking Jagannath." And then Lord Chaitanya did not agree and he asked Sarvabhata Chan, "What do you think?" And then he gave the conclusion.
Okay.
It's exactly the same argument.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
That's why it's describing poetry, you may use the same text, but what meaning you intend, if it is brings out the more, the inner meaning is more glorious than the verse itself, then it is considered the best poetry.
Mm.
But the inner meaning has like the same kind of level of meaning, it's intermediate. And that the inner meaning is lower than actually the text itself, then it is considered a third grade poetry.
Okay, so if the inner meaning comes out more prominent than the poetry, that's the first.
First grade poetry.
And if they're kind of...
Is this higher meaning? Higher
the inner meaning has a, is of a, like brings out more glory, like Lord Chaitanya chanting the words and then only sort of Rupa Goswami wrote the inner meaning. Mm-hmm. Then that verse is like, that is a high grade poetry where you write in such a way that the inner meaning brings out more than what the actual text if you just take the direct word to word meaning.
That's what we have now, just the option. Because they use nice words, but what their meaning is
high grade poetry. Yes, exactly. Yeah,
it's upside down, basically.
Yes, yes. You know, and it's being presented that that's being cultured and things like that. And you're speaking nicely.
And then the middle, what is the middle?
Same level.
Oh, I see. So whatever is meant is what you're saying. Okay.
Because in poetry or even in the context of Vedic literature, we use metaphors and other aspects to intend some meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are six kinds of ways how do you present, like the praman or what it calls the six qualities of the Vedic scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Either way you can say, first one is the shruti. Mm-hmm. It's a direct statement, there is no interpretation, nothing. Mm-hmm. What it says it is.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next five comes linga, and then it's comparison, and then last one is the etymological meaning.
Mm-hmm.
The rest five then all go down in...
So etymological is the last.
Last.
Okay.
So Jaimini says that you have to see everything through. First, if it is like a Shruti statement, then okay, it has a direct meaning. But if it is etymological of meaning, then it should be seen in the context of if there any Shruti statement before like that.
Mm. Okay, so etymological is seen in that context. You won't take it.
Yeah, directly, it doesn't have weightage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the word can have so many meanings.
Yeah.
So when the acharyas go through and take the etymological meaning and then explain the verse in so many different ways to bring out the, you know, how many wonderful things are said in the verse,
mm-hmm.
then that's the, it has to be seen in the context of the original.
So if somebody doesn't have the knowledge of a Shruti statement and whatever he's making up, his etymological meaning or his metaphors,
mm-hmm.
it will all what he considered as important in that context. Like Bhagavatam, the main verse, the statement is the Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam.
Mm-hmm.
When one has faith in that, then all verses, whatever he sees,
will be seen in that context.
So no matter how much ever you can have it like metaphorical or mm-hmm. any other way, it can be seen in that context, and you have mm-hmm. we have no problem in understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So all what acharyas do is give us that faith in that
mm-hmm.
main statement. Then, like, there can be hundreds and thousands and millions of ways how you can see a particular angle, but as long as it is in the context
of the other supporting, yeah, the main, or direct support or indirect or secondary, or yeah, like sometimes they're talking about tapasya and other things like that, and they're saying, talking about it in the context of pure devotional service. The supreme desire to deliver the entire world meets in the two of them, and for that reason also they are one and the same. To deliver all the materially contaminated people of the world, that same Krishna has descended in the moving form of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. By visiting Lord Jagannath, one is freed from material existence. But not all men of all countries can come or be admitted here in Jagannath Puri. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, moves from one country to another, personally or by his representative. Thus he, as the moving Brahman, delivers all the people of the world. Thus I have explained the meaning intended by Mother Sarasvati, the goddess of learning. It is your great fortune that you have described Lord Jagannath, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in that way. Sometimes it so happens that one who wants to chastise Krishna utters the holy name, and thus the holy name becomes the cause of his liberation. Upon hearing this proper explanation by Sri Damodar Goswami, the Bengali poet fell down at the feet of all the devotees and took shelter of them with a straw in his mouth. Thereupon all the devotees accepted his association, explaining his humble behavior. They introduced him to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. By the mercy of the devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that poet from Bengal gave up all other activities and stayed with them at Jagannath Puri. Who can explain the mercy of the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? I have thus described the narration concerning Prajumna Mishra and how, following the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he listened to discourses about Krishna spoken by Ramananda Rai. With the narration, I have explained the glorious characteristics of Sri Ramananda Rai, through whom Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally described the limits of ecstatic love for Krishna. In the course of the narration, I have also told about the drama by the poet from Bengal. Although he was ignorant, because of his faith and humility, he nevertheless attained shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this aspect of humility is very, very important. So it's Lord Chaitanya gives that as the verse on Vaishnav, you could say, you know, etiquette or religion, like these aspects, is that without the humility, actually devotion can't flourish, can't function. So that's why then activities that enhance pride then make the heart unfit for pure devotional service. That's why you have to be very careful, is that the devotees are naturally scholarly, the devotees are naturally expert in what they do and all these things. Like we see, it's whatever goes on, it's wonderful. But we have to be very careful we don't become proud of the position, and it becomes an identity, and you know, it becomes a social or economic tool for the individual. That has to be guarded against. So that's why one has to be very careful. We were discussing that before, last few days, about the aspect of being a professional. If that brings up, being professional means you just do it very nicely and focus on it. Don't be, you know, don't get distracted. But if that brings out a pride that I'm better than others because I follow the professional like the, you know, the corporate does or something, then that will actually not allow pure devotion to come up in the heart. Like that. Does that make sense? So any of that kind of thing, we have to be very careful. So bringing in the modern, you know, inductive academic kind of standard, and then from that becoming proud, bringing in the corporate kind of aspect of, and then becoming proud, these things are will not enhance devotional service. One may think, oh no, but then the karmis will be so impressed they'll become running to join, but they don't.
Yeah. The difficulty seems to be is that somehow or other to stimulate ignorant people, if you give them that identity, mm-hmm. you know, you do and then you glorify. Like I remember in the 90s, you know, if you're a Sankirtan devotee, everybody, you know, just stay aside. If you're good, then it's even better, and your name and this and that. So this tool was used mm-hmm. very much mm-hmm. just to stimulate people for action. Mm-hmm. But then there came a time when we had to change the tool. And it was really difficult because people actually like to be glorified for what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Or if you don't glorify them, they just why would I do it? I don't get money. I don't. And no glorification. I mean, what's the motive? Mm-hmm. So to shift, you know, gears, it's really painful. Or if we start from the mode of goodness, like in traditional. You know, India, let's say, mm-hmm. then you're not too much glorifying, you don't really heavily chastise people, but, you know, everything goes well. Mm-hmm. But we don't see that kind of performance.
Yes. It means, the thing is that our access to culture is through chanting Hare Krishna. Through the pure devotional process, we don't have an access otherwise. It means what you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the whole thing. It's like you see, as someone comes into the movement, whatever the position. If they leave the movement, they go out to the same position. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not. You can rise above that because of devotional service, but on the mundane level, if you want to work in the material world, you go back to wherever you were. So that's the difficulty, is that you have to, one has to know, is that our ability to engage all the good qualities, you know, the natural human qualities, comes because of our performance of devotional service. You know, a person here and there may naturally have such nice qualities, someone like Giriraj Maharaj or Radhanath Maharaj, or like, they just naturally have those qualities. But the point is then they engage them in devotional service. But for others, then you're going to get that from. It's not a separate endeavor. That's what Prabhupada says. There's no separate endeavor to develop good qualities, because why? One, it's a waste of time, because you could do the same activity in connection with Krishna consciousness, so why wouldn't you? And two is that, you know, how? Why would you? You know, these adjustments take, you know, hundreds of lives on the slow path. So the Vedic path is doing that, and they stay like that life after life. So if you want to do that, that's already going on. You know, so if it's being thought, oh, we're doing something new, this soft preaching, that's called the Vedic culture. Soft preaching is the Vedic culture. You know, someone comes in and somebody lies through, slowly moving up, and then comes Brahma, something like that, you know, as was described to Sanatana Goswami. You know, unlimited living entities, a few are human. Of those few, there's 400,000 different, you know, groups. Only a few are civilized. That means they follow the Vedic culture. Of that, only a few are interested in, you know, proper in their duties. And this, of that, only a few are. You know, it just keeps going on. And so it takes them so many steps to get to that. So it's already there. It's nothing new. This whole idea is that, oh, we're doing something new. It's a different time. Or that. No, that's what the Vedas are talking about. The flowery words of the Veda are just that. To engage someone who's you know, a materialist, to regulate his life. It's just they're doing it without the regulation. So it's flowery words and there's no regulation. How will it elevate? They're not chanting. They're not that. So what's the tool to make it work? You know, it's like Mayavadis who are into sense gratification. It's like, it's not going to work. Jnana means no sense gratification. And karma means sense gratification with regulation. But here is sense gratification, no regulation. So then, you know, it can't work. So it's the culture comes because of our focus on pure devotional service. Then those natural good qualities come. Then you'll see devotees can encourage, because then they encourage. Like I remember seeing sometimes. Let's say we have. Like those days that you're talking about, when it was all about, you know, and he distributed, you know, how you say, 3 back to Godheads, you know, and 5 this, you know, and all that whole thing, you know, banging drums, I mean. So nice, but at the same time, as no one else is glorified. But I remember seeing a few times in some places where you have big gathering devotees, fabulous feast and all that, and then after the feast, whoever was leading would call out those devotees and tell them, these guys cooked the feast. You like the feast, these guys cooked the feast, you know. Or, you know, your wonderful arrangements for the deities and how fabulous and all that. That's these pujaris and like that, you know. So the thing is, if you're always appreciating and all that, you don't have to necessarily do that as a public thing. If it comes up naturally because of something exceptional, then nice, then it's very good. But it should be that encouragement is always going on like that, because that started later. And so, therefore, and who responded to that the best were those who, like you said, if I'm getting glorified, I do it, and if I'm not, why should I do? But the fun part is the ones that were doing it because that's the duty, that's what's been given by Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, they're still distributing books today. And all those ones that you had to bang the drum for, otherwise they won't do it, they're not here. They're out making money somewhere. But that they've done all that, that's a glory, it'll never be lost. And they may, you know, they may have already, you know, come back and are engaged nicely in the movement and things like that, or on their own, they're doing something nice and being Krishna conscious. But the point is like what you said, is we have to be careful. So it's just another adjustment that will create problem. You know, if we let in too much of this academic and professional false ego, then, you know, and bureaucratic false ego.
Yeah. You have to wait for the generation to fade away and then start from the beginning. Otherwise, like I mentioned, shifting gears, it's almost impossible.
You have to put in the clutch, yeah.
It's almost impossible because people just can't.
You do have the aspect that there is a historical, a historical evidence of this, that, you know, that's how the Lord does it. Is people were, after crossing the Red Sea, then they walked around for 40 years there. Why 40 years? I mean, it's like you walk across the Red Sea, basically, you know, you go a little bit through this. How long would it take you to walk from the Red Sea?
You can walk
from Red Sea to Sinai to whatever is that?
It's not that.
But, yeah, but 40 years, why? Because
No GPS.
True. And when they did come in, they came in from Jordan. They came around all the way around. But
I heard the really funny thing. And they said that after walking 40 years, they ended up in that place. There is no oil.
No oil.
No oil. The only one little place in the whole Middle East, there's no oil in it. In the ground. You know, everywhere else.
It said milk and honey, it didn't say oil.
Yeah.
Neither milk nor honey, no oil in 40 years.
Yeah, walking around like that. But the point was is that that whole generation that worshipped the golden calf would die. So only the children, the grandchildren, they went in. So it is a typical thing. So one has to be, yeah, it just takes long.
So the Bedouins are those who never made it out of the Sinai Desert.
Still wondering.
Maharaj, I wanted to mention something. We have in ISKCON today a whole new class of professionals. In other words, not kami professionals, but devotees who go out there, do some training, do some studies, get a big diploma, and then they come back in, and you've got this ongoing of retreat, seminar, courses, training on professional things like psychology, healing, you know, ombudsman, mediation. There's all sorts of things going on. Now, when these courses take place, there's actually very little Krishna consciousness. It's mainly professional.
So you're being nice.
Well, I'm just saying
you're being nice. It says there's very little.
Yeah,
I mean, you're giving him that much of the doubt.
That's right.
Okay.
And every time I hear, like now, we just got a promotion today for a series of six classes on empathy.
Empathy.
And my wife wants to say, should I sign? I said, what for? Another thing on healing and understanding the mind and
empathy. But as you said, empathy is the natural quality of the soul, and you're only only when it's done in connection with pure devotional service does it come out in its natural form. Otherwise, it comes out in a distorted form on the material. So if you're talking from the karmis, that empathy will be distorted. Because then how do you discern? Because like it is now, is that you have this empathy where let's say you have a criminal, you know, and he was starting to get his life together like that, and then things, even though he was such a nonsense, but he's then okay. But then you adjust things in the society where now these people aren't corrected or stopped, it's all right for them. And then they just take advantage and just, you know, actually go out and pillage and burn and kill and, you know, all that.
But my point is that those professional devotees, with all due respect, they are now the absolute authority in everything.
Except devotional service.
Well, you know,
I'm just saying,
in their own right,
talking from here, they're not. But in their own mind, you know, as the Brahmin might have thought,
right.
They're pretty good. Yeah. And the fun part is do they charge?
Well, maybe sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
I've always seen they do.
That's the meaning of professional.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, what professional are you if you don't charge?
Yeah, because the difficulty is if something like that, then you have a problem that they'll, even if they've learned something, they'll lose that potency with time.
Because now any issue you bring to the AA, but we're taking care of this. We have courses for that. And I don't know, there's so much professionalism going on.
Yeah, no, it's Prabhupada said we're professional spiritualists. Who's cultivating professional spiritualism? That's who we are. These other things, this also, what is it, a how many day course?
Six sessions.
But it goes over a month and a half.
Yeah, but still, it's six sessions.
Yeah.
Like that. Is there anything in the world that you could go to for 6 days and you would be called a professional? You know what I'm saying? Could you become a doctor, a lawyer, a business? You could get your MBA in 6 days, or, you know, is that anything? So that's the whole fun part, is that, you know, we set up our own kind of...
And most of the time it's just devotees accumulating information.
Information, that's all it is. They're only talking that, because it's only knowledge and skills. There's no, you know, the actual... proper qualities required to do that. They can't. How do they teach that? But what are you going to do? That's what qualities are learned by practical application. That's why it's Abhideya. You know, what are they going to do? You know, it's nice. It's nice that they're trying to be nice. You know, that's better than that. But to think that that is the process of being nice. Because the thing is what you have to understand is those who are now today worried about being nice of older devotees, when they were younger, they weren't nice. So by chanting, they become nice, and now they worry about it. But the point is, it came about by chanting, not by some other process.
Yes.
They say, oh, but the devotees before were so rough. Yeah, and that was you. It wasn't somebody else. You know? So by chanting, now you come to the point where you value these things. So that's by chanting. So therefore, you get everyone to chant, and we have to, you know, and so everything comes up. So it comes up from that process. Otherwise, where is the system for, you know, becoming, you know, advanced in? Where's the course on humility? Why don't they do a course on that?
Six days is online.
Hmm?
6 days is online.
Yeah, and only Jayadvaita Maharaj would do that one.
One day.
Huh? Yeah, and afterwards you would be humble because of what he'd say. You go, oh, okay. So. One has to be very, very careful, because Prabhupada, a few times I've heard him in classes called, say, the devotees are professional spiritualists. You know, that's our profession, is being spiritualist and then training people in spiritualism. That's what we're doing. So us training people in what's pure devotional service, that's what we're professional at. And anything else, if you have it, then it's an ornament. Any quality, any thing that you have in the way of the knowledge and science and arts and industry and all these different things, then it's a ornament. But it has to be on something. You know, like Prabhupada says, ornaments on a dead body, what's the point? So if there's no pure devotional service, they're ornaments on a dead body. You know, I just heard today Prabhupada was saying something about if you're identifying with your own locale in that. And, you know, he gave the example, it says American money, you know, shouldn't be used in India. He said right on there, he says, you're not qualified to be a GBC. Said it right in the class. He says, you're not qualified as a GBC. A GBC means you've gone beyond the bodily conception. Very far out. I could look and see which class it is, but it's... So in this class, I was talking... very quietly, but very, very straightforward. Not rough, just very pleasant, but very straightforward. I don't know what's the context of the class and that. He's talking on Prahlad Maharaj's instructions. And it's on the one about where he's talking about, you know, people. It's a verse past, you know, the materialist, then he identifies with, you know, the family, the this, the that. It's, I think it's one or two after that one. But he's given many classes on it. Yeah, I'll have to look and see. No, it's fine. Depends on the day, what's going on. Sometimes it feels cold, sometimes you don't even notice it. Like I sometimes stand in front of it, you don't notice it. It's even blowing, and other times, it's like, it feels so cold. So today's fine. Maybe the volume of hot air. That's
Okay.
So it has nothing to do with my talking too much hot air. Okay. So, so it's just very simple. We have our process, and our process is very, very sophisticated. And so if they want to study that. These other things, those are easy. And as most go in that, I remember one devotee, before joining, he was involved in that whole corporate seminar, self-help kind of thing. And one time he went to, some big, big guy came to their place, did a thing program, one of these, hundreds of people come and all that. Each one is big bucks. You make millions off of one of these programs. Then, he was sitting, listening, and he was contemplating what he said, and everybody, as soon as it's over, they all get up and walk out, because everyone's busy. And then he noticed that it was just him and the guy who gave the lecture that were still there. And the guy was, packing up his briefcase, putting his things inside, very peacefully and all that. So then he took the opportunity, he walked up, and introduced himself and then asked, just out of curiosity, now you've said all these really, nice points and all that and given very good direction on how, what you could do and everything like that. What's the percentage of the people in this group that will be able to actually use it and apply it? And the guy just kind of stopped and looked at him and says, none of them. But, so why do you do it? They want to hear, so you're trying to help. But they can't apply it because they don't have the qualities of the character. So that's the thing. These seminars, you go on and you'll do that. But it's not because I went to the seminar, now I'm empathetic. No,
Empathic.
Well, emphatic means you're making a strong point. Empathetic. That's it. It's where you put the emphasis. English is so weird, right? So then, you're empathetic because you went to the course. You didn't do the course, you can't be empathetic. It's kind of like, no, if you chant Hare Krishna, that's how you develop. And then these things should be pointed out. But in these courses, are they using the Gita or anything, or are they just using what the karmics say? So that's the thing. But his point was that unless someone has the ability, so basically he would know that this person who came up and talked to me now, he may be the only one that can use what I said. Because it wasn't that afterwards and they all crowded around or asking more questions or that. They all just got up and left. They took their notes. Yeah, okay, now we know how to do it. So it says that he can give them inspiration, he can give them confidence, but the point is they have to do it. So, are they running a retreat where they're showing people and they're practicing being empathetic or something? Or are they walking out and then, feeding poor people or homeless people? Or what are they doing? And is that connected with the highest, welfare, or is it connected with just ordinary worldly welfare? Because in this world, that's considered great. Everyone's so self-centered that if you a little bit care about someone else, it's so, humanitarian and all this and that. But these points are already there. They've already been discussed. Prabhupada's pointing out is that people say it's new. He says Prahlad Maharaj is talking about this, long before. These things, nothing's new. So this is illusion, they think it's new, it's different, we have to do things different. No, it's the same place. You know, it's just like, does the restaurant every day completely change the decor and the menu and everything because it's a different day and different people walked in? So people walk in and then they make their menu? No, they have the same menu. Some maybe like it, some don't. Yeah, so although he was ignorant because of his faith and humility, he nevertheless attained shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that's the point, is faith and humility, that will get you somewhere. Ignorance, not so much. The pastimes of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are the essence of nectar. From the stream of one of his pastimes flows hundreds and thousands of branches. Anyone who reads and hears these pastimes with faith and love can understand the truth about devotional service. Devotees in the transcendental mellows of the pastimes of Sri... Anyone who reads and hears these pastimes with faith and love can understand the truth about devotional service, devotees, and the transcendental mellows of the pastimes of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps.
Maharaj, have you already read the interaction between Pradyumna Mishra and Ananda Roy?
Yeah, that was right in the beginning.
Yeah,
oh, I thought the Bengali Brahmana was the first pastime.
No. Because like you said, it just mentions that it was there and he went to see him. That's all it mentioned. It doesn't say, because we know what Ramananda Rai is going to talk about.
Yeah.
We know, you know, the level that he can talk at and how exact and how expert.
Yeah, okay.
Like that. But the main point that's being pointed out there is that it's not who you are. It's what is your level of devotional realization that makes you qualified or not. Just as you see, there's that famous story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur when he was at the Rajapatam, right? And so then he had some big scholar in Bengal come and, you know, want to meet, because in those days he was, you know, very famous and big people liked to come and speak to him and all that. So he said he wanted to learn the philosophy and all that. Could you direct me to someone who, you know, he's basically going to him directly and thinking, you know, he's so qualified that he would have, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would need to teach, or he would be inspired because, oh, you're such a big guy, I'll teach you or something. And he says, oh, you have to talk to this devotee. He can teach you. And he gave him his name. So he went out and he went to the temple and this and that and asked around like that. And anybody who looked, you know, kind of mature, this or that, and, you know, where is this devotee and like that, you know, I'm supposed to speak to him. And then they all pointed. They kept pointing, you know, in this direction, and he kept following until he's getting farther and farther kind of away from the main scene. Until, you know, someone points out he's at the Goshala. So he thought, oh, okay, you know, big scholar or saying, you know, cows, you know, they hang out there. And he goes down there and he asks for that person, and then the person comes over. It's one of these guys in a gumshoe covering my head and putting a cow up. And he's like, huh? So he had sent him to learn from the devotee who did service in the Goshala. But it's not just that, it's that devotee was just so mature in devotional service that he could explain pure devotional service. He maybe didn't know all the grammar, all the this, that, but he knew what is. And the fun part, someone told me another, it's another aspect, just to show his position, is that last night the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was remaining here. The devotees were doing kirtan, you know, because they know something's happening. But at one point, he just stopped the kirtan. He said, call that devotee. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't really, he wasn't a good singer. Didn't have a good voice, couldn't, you know, carry a tune nicely. But, you know, that was the final kirtan.
It was Sri Ramakrishna.
Hmm?
It was Sri
Ramakrishna.
It was?
Huh? Some people say, but it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
From the mat there, they said it was that Goshala guy. He may have been doing the kirtan before that. Means, in other words, in those last kirtans, Sridhar Maharaj may have been singing.
Yeah.
But the very last kirtan was done by that devotee.
Right.
Because Sridhar Maharaj's mat was very famous for very good singers.
Really?
Yeah. Well, they were very good singers.
But not Sridhar Maharaj.
No, not himself. Not himself. not Sridhar Maharaj himself, but he, his monk always had, back in the 70s, the best singers. Like, they knew the tunes, they knew how to do very proper Gaudiya, you know, very nice like that. You don't see them nowadays. But the point was is that it's the devotional thing that was the thing. So in the same way here, so you have this big, big scholar, Brahmin, and this and that, but he's going to Ramananda Rai, who socially is considered the Shudra. But he knows the conclusions. In other words, the discussion, Lord Chaitanya's discussions on Prayojana Tattva are with Ramananda Rai. Like that. So in that way you can say he's the Acharya. Though they say also in like the application of practice of it, they'll say Raghunath Das. Like that. But the deity then is Madhu Pandit.
Madhu Pandit, yes.
Yeah, because his deity is Gopinath. But he's not mentioned as the Acharya of
that's right.
Of that. While Sanatana and Rupa, then they are the Acharya and the deity. But then the other. So you can see is then they all have these. So it's very, you know, yeah, complicated. But that point is there, is that that's what's being made, is that who knows about Krishna, that's the one to hear from. You don't worry about social status, this, that, these, that. That's not the thing. So who knows, then that's the one.
But knowing is different than knowing based on realization.
But here, yes, but here it's how can these things you know if there's not real? You can't know pure devotional service unless it's realization.
No, I mean, the other devotees know a lot.
Yes, but do they talk pure devotional service?
You know, they like rasa and katar.
But if you see in the other aspects it matches and the qualities that they have and all that, then it's nice. But if you see it's only there that they excel, but outside of that, then it's not necessarily as strong. Then you can see is that, for as far as the kata goes, is nice. They can do. But if you actually want to know about these things, go to someone else.
Right.
You know, they can tell the stories nicely and all that. But then everything becomes reduced down to the same level of story. So you're telling they'll be telling Krishna Bhavanamrita stories, but they have to generalize it and everything, so you lose all the things. So basically you're talking about who's there, who did what, and like that, but not necessarily the moves and the tastes and things like that. And the emphasis is not on that. You know, otherwise you have the... Yeah. Does that make sense? So they'll emphasize just the unfolding of the story rather than what was happening in the story. You know, because Prabhupada gives a reference where he mentions about, if you want to know this particular aspect, then Krishna Bhavanamrita, that describes that. So it's just there. So if in there is that they tell the stories, everyone becomes inspired and they are able to be engaged in devotional service nicely and they are able to sustain that, then that's very good. It's a very nice service. You know, but otherwise, if they speak these things, it's nice. Devotees are happy, but you don't necessarily see reflected in their lifestyle. Then it's not as it won't be as strong. You know, because otherwise, you see, it goes on. The Bhagavad Saptas, these guys are good speakers. They draw huge crowds, thousands. One of the guys, because he speaks and his voice can't, you know, you can only do so much with your voice. He has this vrata where he doesn't talk before a certain time of the day. You know, I think noon or something like that. That way people who come to see him, that he doesn't talk to them. So they can come and offer respects and then leave. Otherwise he'd be talking all day. So generally everyone has to go to work, so therefore then by lunchtime then he's free, in the afternoon they'll be at home resting and that, and then he can go to his program and speak. And he's big. I mean, really, really big.
He's speaking about?
Yeah, Bhagavad Sapta. You know? Okay. You know, as Prabhupada says, mainly about 10th canto, mainly about Vrindavan pastimes, mainly about gopis. You know, he'll be a little smidgen here and there, you know, like that. But also, he speaks a lot, I think, on Ramayana. He also does that. And that's where he, I think, excels the most.
I didn't say it. They only speak in Ramayana. He only speaks Bhagavatam.
I think when he came here, he spoke on Bhagavatam. Because it's not a wrong place.
Right.
Everywhere else.
Hindi?
And yeah, Hindi.
Hindi. They cannot speak any other.
Yeah. But, you know, they're professional guys. They're nice, they're pleasant people. You know, they're supportive of devotees much of the time. But at the same time, as they're not giving anything of substance. So if we're only looking at, that's the thing, is that if we're only looking at volume, that's not enough. It means it's like that time, I think they have come, when they first came to India. So Srila Prabhupada, and I think Chutananda Swami and Jagataka Maharaj. They were staying at Sridhar Maharaj's mom. And so they stayed there, but during the day they would come and spend much of the day at Devananda Gaudiya Math with Kesha Maharaj. And Chutananda was explaining, you know, they come in and, you know, everybody's wearing the same color, they're all dressed the same, you know, very uniform, all with dancing kind of, you know, together. And, you know, it's a very impressive presentation like that. And then, you know, after being there for some days, because, you know, they were at the one mat, so they'd be talking with Sridhar Maharaj, seeing this his scene and all that, and then coming to Devananda, because they're next to each other. And on the rickshaw. So one day when they were riding back from Devananda Gaudiya Math, then Chutananda, you know, because he's very intelligent, very observant. So he says, Sridhar Maharaj talks about the quality of devotional service. And Kesha Maharaj then presents, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but the quantity, you know, so many devotees doing that, it makes impression. Says, but you, Prabhupada, you do both. You know, so quality in quantity. And then Prabhupada turned to him and said, you understand. That's the thing. Otherwise, they're getting quantity, but where's the quality? That's the thing, is that, you know, it's been so many weeks and all that at the yoga studio, and so many people, 10, 20, 30 people are there regularly, you know, depending upon what it is, so you don't want to disturb them. You know, you wouldn't want them to go away, but the point is, where's the quality? You know, where's anybody who is developing an interest in Krishna consciousness and God consciousness? And you can't tie yourself up like a pretzel either, so it's not like you're, you know, super yogi or something.
Nowadays, what is happening with all these mutts there is, the earlier guys, they had some, like, positive devotional attitude, they maintained their mutt, there's some level of goodness, everything. Now then, the next generation, whoever comes and try to dedicate in the mat, initially he seems a very good man, and afterwards, still while the guru is there, he completely takes over the mat, gets his people in, and then it's like just take over. And most of the places, anywhere in Haridwar, Puri, recently a devotee from Puri came out, and he said, just I'm staying there, 3-4 mat heads, they called me, we'll accept you as our child, you just stay in the mat with us, you need not do anything, you bring all your people in, because we trust you there.
No, because these other guys, you don't know.
You don't know, they just take over and then they're just doing all nonsense. So that's the...
Yeah, because it's just because, I mean, it's always been there, Prabhupada always talks about being professionals, but they do all these things just to maintain themselves and people, you know, move into, you know, the ashrams and mutts and all that just because they can maintain themselves. You know, it's an easy way to maintain themselves and be respected for it. You're a beggar, but you're respected.
Easy?
That's
an easy way?
Yeah, for Indians.
For Indians, yeah. I mean, so they're coming from, you know, backgrounds, so they get up in the morning, they do this and that, and so, you know, they're it's their normal lifestyle, but in this way, without working, people take, give donations, and they'll be respected. Well, if they did that outside, they'd be beggars in the street, and no one would respect them.
Also, Maharaj, once I went to an event in Bihar, one of the devotees called me. There's this one of those Trivedi Chaturvedi Brahman. He came and he started, "Oh, you're also a Brahman, I'm also a Brahman." And that is, I said, "I'm not a Brahman by birth." And I know already then where the discussion will go. "Oh, I'm not a Brahman by birth, and by mercy of Guru, I got this." And then, I belong to a Brahman family. I said, no, but you follow all the rules, etc. Then he said, although glorified, and said, "Here is my young son, you take him in your mat." Last time a guru came, he took one of our villagers, Brahman's child. Now this boy is doing saptas and he's earning good money, like he maintains his family, he's gone into a good home. And so you take our child with you.
Mm-hmm. Then he can become, yeah.
This is the first time I was surprised somebody glorifying you as a Brahman, but he has his...
He has his purpose. Yeah, that's it. Because once we were approached back in the 80s, that there's some community in Karnataka. I don't remember what's the group, but it's some particular kind of group. But then they were always connected with Sringeri.
Okay.
And then they heard about ISKCON, they wanted to connect to us and like that, and the Brahmachari training. And then we told them, what it is and what we're doing and how long it all this is like that. And it sounded interesting, and then, told them that, this and that, or, And so then, but then they never got back to us. They went back to Sringeri.
Better chances.
Hmm?
Better chances.
Yeah. More opportunities.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki.